scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left!
Off the glass and left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get another hour of Flames Talk underway. It is Wednesday, April 2nd, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Wednesday. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We got a busy hour ahead for you. Pat Steinberg along with you, and let's jump right in. Lots to talk about when it comes to this team that we cover. Lots to talk about around the NHL. And it's time to welcome in our NHL insider. Day late this week. Couldn't get it done on Tuesday, so flipped it to Wednesday with our next guest, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, Amazon, and more. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. Happy Wednesday. How are you, pal?
I'm pretty good. How you doing, Pat?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, we're into the stretch drive of the season for the Calgary Flames. They now have 8 games to go, 16 points on the table after their loss to Utah on Tuesday night. And last few weeks, I've just kind of been starting off our chats with a weekly check-in on where you're at with the Flames and their playoff chase. And after how things went on Monday, that comeback win over Colorado, then they lose in regulation the next day in Utah, and St. Louis wins again. How's Frankie feeling on the weekly Flames playoff check-in?
Gotta be honest, a little bit pessimistic. As much heart as this team has showed, I mean, it just really becomes a numbers game, a math game at this point. And I think everyone's kind of, at least in Calgary, settling into the realization that there's really no margin for error left in terms of what the Flames have on their schedule. This is it.
Yeah, it is very much at the point now where the margin for error almost doesn't exist. With what St. Louis is doing, is Minnesota the team to track down if you're the Flames?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems that way. The only problem is Minnesota has a pretty easy schedule remaining.
Yeah,
they play a lot of teams that are out of it. And beyond that, I mean, they got an update today on Kirill Kaprizov and Joel Eriksson Ek, which indicated that they got good news from their doctors. I know Kaprizov saw a specialist yesterday in New York. They've been skating. They look great, and they're due to return. I don't know. They didn't give an exact timeline. I'd say probably about a week away. And so with that being the case, that team is going to get a lot stronger. Yeah. And it'd be easy to say, yeah, that's the team to go run down, but an easier schedule, plus getting two absolute critical pieces back. Like, I just don't know how realistic that is. So, I mean, Flames have 2 games in hand on the Blues, 1 on the Wild. They're going to need some help.
Yeah, and no tiebreakers on either team. And, of course, the Wild would get their 2 big guys back just in time for their head-to-head matchup against the Flames on April 11th, right?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, it's kind of trending that way. They said very, very likely for both those players to play in the regular season. If it's not then it's going to be – yeah, right.
Okay, let me ask you about this, and you and I have had plenty of talks about Dan Vladar throughout the season, and you have been, you know, continuing to bang the drum throughout the year that, hey, like, yeah, I mean, Devin Cooley's in the system, and Dustin Wolf is the goalie of the future, but don't write off the possibility of at some point the Flames and Vladar figuring out a new contract. And on yesterday's show, Tuesday's show, you know, I made the case about how I've done a complete 180 on Dan Vladar's future. And, you know, I think at this point with the way that he's played and what he's done for them here down the stretch, I've kind of come around on it and said, you know what, I think if the Flames have their druthers and they were the only ones making the decision, then I would try to see if I could bring back Vladar for another couple of years. What do you feel the chances of that are now? And knowing that you've been kind of keeping that door open all year long, what do you feel the chances are now of something getting done between the Flames and Vladar for the next few years on an extension?
It's kind of hard to handicap because I think the initial conversations that the Flames had with Vladar, he just seemed to be a touch too expensive. And, you know, think back to an earlier portion of the season, he had been given the tougher assignments, the tougher starts to begin the year to allow Dustin Wolf to get his feet wet. And then afterwards, his numbers also kind of suffered. So he was asking for, I think, something closer to $3 million a year, which was more than the Flames, I think, were ready at that time to pay. And now, I don't know. I don't know how the Flames are thinking about it. I don't know how ready they view Cooley is to just stepping into that role when Cooley, if I'm not mistaken, is already under contract for next season.
He is, yeah, on a one-way. It goes from a two-way to a one-way next year, too.
Yeah, and so that being the case, like, not everything is going to come down to straight dollars and cents. Like, if they – look, they brought in Cooley on this current contract and are paying him well more than the AHL average at $400,000. But it's really going to come down to how reasonable Dan Vladar's number is, and then what other opportunities exist for him. Mm-hmm. I think probably like any guy that is 27 years old and has paid his dues and has been in a spot where he feels like he could battle to be a number one in this league, will he get a better chance elsewhere? Or is he comfortable with this situation playing 27 to 30 games a year moving forward with Dustin Wolf being the anointed, not even heir apparent? He's here. He's the guy.
Yeah, I wonder, and we were talking a little bit about that. Like, you could probably, whether it's, you know, potentially Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, or like you could point to a number of different spots and say, you know what, you don't have to squint to see maybe Vladar could get more playing time there. And we know that he likes it here, and we know that he is very happy being in Calgary. But I do wonder, and that's always been my caveat to the whole thing, Frankie, is, you know, does he prioritize wanting to get more time? Because you're right. I mean, going forward, 60 to 65% of the starts are going to be Dustin Wolf's if the Flames have their way and Dustin Wolf lives up to his end of the bargain. Do you want to come into next season as the clear understudy, but in a place that you're comfortable in, or do you want to go see if there's more playing time elsewhere? That's really what it comes down to for me, too.
Well, he's also getting pushed on the other end of it, which is Cooley's trying to take his job, and I don't know that the Flames are going to be thrilled with paying Cooley $775 to exclusively play for the Wranglers. That's a big ticket.
Yep.
So it's pressure on both ends, and it's going to be if Dan Vladar is looking closer to 2.5 or 2.25, which I think is still relatively reasonable, then I could see them having all three goalies under contract for next year and moving forward.
Yep.
But which itch does he want to scratch? The payday, the opportunity, the comfort. He's got a few different options in front of him. And to be fair, to him, I would say that the other part of this is if you're the Flames and you're not 100% sold on Cooley, I'd say you're probably not going to have a whole ton better options on the backup market than Dan Vladar.
Yep. One more on the Flames. It's I know that you and I were talking a little bit yesterday on Tuesday, and you know, you at the time had some Adar Suniev intel. We couldn't make the hit on Tuesday work. Suniev has signed.
Hey, wasting my work.
You're the one who couldn't come on at our regular times. So I think
that's true.
What tell us a little bit about what you know about the Suniev contract. He signs his 3-year entry-level deal after his season at UMass comes to an end. What can you tell us about the deal the Flames have signed on Wednesday?
Well, I think a huge sigh of relief for the Flames. Look, he's a guy that has been a very impressive prospect, particularly in relation to where he was picked. And he's someone that I think the Flames had really been pushing hard to get under contract as soon as his college season had ended. And that was really my intel, was that the Flames were pushing hard to try and get a deal done. And they were, I'd say 48 hours ago, probably felt like it was 50-50 whether or not he was going to leave school. I don't know exactly what put it over the edge, but this is a guy who has an elite NHL-level shot. Mm-hmm. And for a team that struggled to score as much as the Flames have, I don't know that watching his game, he's ready for the NHL right now. But that shot is NHL ready, and who knows, maybe you give him an opportunity and he's someone that gives you a little shot in the arm here.
I do wonder if what put it over the top, Frankie, to that point is the fact that they eventually decided they were okay with burning the first year. I wonder if that was a little bit of the holdup. They would have maybe liked him to not have the contract start until next year and ATO him in the American League. I wonder if that put it over the top.
Well, I've seen both sides of this argument, and I've gone through this a lot in the last few days with NHL managers, and I think there's a large portion of the fan base that says, God, why would we sign this guy to this ELC that starts this year as opposed to next year? Don't we want 3+ years of him at a really affordable rate? And the answer, of course, to that in most situations is yes. However, there's another part at play here that I'm not sure that the casual fan necessarily grasps onto, which is, though, since it essentially becomes just a 2-year deal, those years you're somewhat limited in what you can compile in overall stats. It's one less year to pile up numbers, which then go towards your next deal and making a proper comparison. And so,
keeps the numbers down on the next deal.
Yeah, exactly. You may be getting there faster, but if you, let's say he doesn't play a full NHL season next season, which I think is probably pretty likely.
Yeah.
Then, okay, so he's got one real season, assuming the third year of the deal that he's a full-time NHL player. He's got one full season to put up some big numbers to put in a contract that's going to make a dent. The odds are probably pretty stacked against that. So yeah, you limit the time of the compiling time is the best way to say it for a player to really add up some significant numbers.
Yep. Yep. And
in the meantime, what you do, Pat, is you get him in your system and you get your hands on him to develop him, which the Flames are really confident in the development process that they've got. And beyond that, you don't flirt with the idea of, hey, this kid's going back for another year of school. Then he's tantalizingly close to becoming an unrestricted free agent, and we spent the draft capital, and we think this kid could be something. Let's just get him under contract, get him out of school, and we'll figure out the rest from there. Yeah.
And I do think that much is exactly where the Flames are on this player. So another college free agent signs, and we'll see if Adar Suniev, who is not eligible to play in the American League the rest of this year, we'll see if he's a guy that maybe gets some NHL action between now and the end of the regular season. Go ahead.
My only question for you as a wordsmith is it Suniev or Suniev?
I think it's Adar Suniev is how we've been saying it.
Okay, because I'm just telling you here, and I don't know what you guys could see in Canada, but during the NCAA tournament, they were calling him Suniev.
Okay, well, I'll check on that, and I just got a note.
Just to throw it out there. Look, might be one of those kids that you go up to and you ask him, you say, which way do you pronounce? He's like, oh, I don't care, whatever you want, because that's what hockey guys do. But I always... I don't know which one's correct, so I was curious.
And I just got a message from somebody who also knows it's Idar. Idar Suniev.
Yeah, I knew it was Idar. Yeah.
So there you go.
Knew that.
I'll make sure I check that out when he, because I believe he is on his way to Calgary as we speak right now, and will join the team sometime.
About time you did some work.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll let you know. We're talking to Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us on Tuesdays this week on a Wednesday. Hey, where did the St. Louis Blues come from, Frank? Like, what are we witnessing here?
We are witnessing one of the great coaching changes of all time. I mean, we had a great film session today on Daily Faceoff Live where John Goyans came in and broke down exactly what he's seeing as the keys to the Blues' success. And he attributed 70% of what this turnaround has been to Jim Montgomery and his system and style. You know, I think Doug Armstrong deserves a lot of credit for the conviction that he had to fire his coach and on the spot and bring in someone else that was just recently fired. Yes, he had the advantage of previously working with Jim Montgomery and had some good insight, but it's not easy to tell Drew Bannister after you just signed him to a 2-year deal, hey, you didn't make it 5 months.
Yeah, you're out.
And so not only that, but we're getting rid of you solely just because someone better is on the market. That's not an easy conversation. I will say that I've had varying points this season in which I've felt in the sense I get from around the league that Doug Armstrong isn't a big believer in his roster or his team. And yet here they are, winners of 10 straight, 16-2-2 in their last 20, best in the league in goals for, goals against at 5-on-5. They've been outrageous. And now they're creating this type of scenario where, having passed the Minnesota Wild, the question is now, is this a team that can go on a run that could, you know, potentially upset someone in the first round?
Yep. It's been a little more than a week since the Flyers fired John Tortorella and replaced him with Brad Shaw. Now that we've had a little bit more time to wrap our head around that one, what can you tell us about why, with so little time to go this season, why the Flyers decided to make a coaching change?
It was happening either way at the end of the season. I think it was a tough few weeks for everyone involved. I think he had been smashing heads with the Flyers front office. I think he had been clashing with players, as we know, Cam York, the public sort of acknowledgement of that. And this was someone that then verbalized it in saying, I'm not really interested in coaching a team like this. Once those words come out of his mouth publicly, like, the clashes behind the scenes, I think people can live with and say, you know what, let's get through the next 9 games left and we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
It made it untenable. They couldn't continue, I think, for their own identity and pride, and they had to pull the trigger. So I think the tough part about that, as everyone kind of breathes a sigh of relief, the players have a little bit more freedom. They're unshackled. Matvei Michkov has been a lot better. They've actually won a few games in a row, which is, I mean, as damaging as it gets, as they've gone from the 4th worst record in the league to the 7th in really short order and could pile on a few more meaningless wins. That really hurts their overall posture and goal. But I understand where they were coming from in that it couldn't stand the way that it was.
Yep. What do we think the chances are that Shaw gets the permanent head coaching job there, or is that going to be a pretty extensive search done by the Flyers?
Probably pretty small. I think as much as everyone really respects Brad Shaw and the work that he's done in his long career, that I don't know that he's necessarily atop the Flyers list. I do think that they're really hoping that Rick Tocchet becomes available out of Vancouver. Keith Jones is incredibly tight with Rick Tocchet, going back to their playing days together with the Flyers. And obviously, as a well-known figure in the Philadelphia market, I think they'd love to try and make a splash. I don't know if he's ultimately going to get there or even if the Flyers are a great fit for Tocchet with where he's at. I would even make the argument one step further than that I don't know that this is a Flyers team as it's currently constructed that's ready for a big-time coach, but I'm also not the one making those types of decisions. Yeah. So I think the Flyers are going to be in a spot where they're going to have options, mostly because it's a proud organization that's willing to pay, but they're going to have to choose that next person pretty carefully.
Hey, Frank, in the preseason, so this would have been like 18 months ago, you were like, hey, watch out for the Vancouver Canucks. And I was like, nah, the Vancouver Canucks, what are you talking about? And you know, Vancouver ended up winning the division. And I said, oh, yeah, you know what? Let's give Frank his credit. He was bang on that one. So then this year, when you said, hey, you know, my preseason pick this year is the Montreal Canadiens to really come out of nowhere and shock some people and be right there in the playoff mix to the very end. Well, not only are they there, Frank, they're in the driver's seat right now after that bonkers comeback win over Florida on Tuesday night. They're in the driver's seat to lock down that final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. So, number one, are they the team that you think's got the best chance to do that? And number two, why were they the team that you thought had the chance to be the surprise group this year?
Number one for me, that was a heck of a lead-in, and if you're looking to join the agent business, I would consider hiring you. I could give you 10% of my next deal, which is what my current guy gets, which is way too much. To answer your question, I would say that what I saw from the Montreal Canadiens was an NHL playoff-ready offense, a forward group that could score, that had a dynamic ability to them. And to be honest, I don't even know that it's necessarily played out the way that I thought it would. Nick Suzuki was really pedestrian to start the year. It took Juraj Slafkovský a long time to find his footing again after signing a massive contract. Obviously, they had the training camp injury with Patrick Laine. It took him a while to get his power play mojo back once he finally got in the lineup. And it's been a strange year from that standpoint. But I knew that Marty St. Louis would find a way to get the most out of his group. And I had a real good feeling. I picked Lane Hudson to win the Calder. Frankly, was laughed at for the first few weeks of the season. They were like, this guy, you're out of your mind. And everyone was saying that the Canadians stink. And this isn't me gloating. I just think Lane Hudson is a special, special player. And you see that reflected in the point totals. You see that in his Cale Makar-like edge work. And then you kind of peel back a layer and you consider some recent history. And I crunched some numbers today through the first 76 games of his career, because Hudson played two last year. He's got 64 points. He's the 10th rookie defenseman in NHL history to hit 60 in one season. And when you consider Makar is only 3 points better. And he's got five more than Quinn Hughes had at the same exact juncture of his career. Does that mean that Lane Hudson is going to be the next Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes? I think that's a stretch. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But this is a guy that is a franchise-changing defenseman. And when you add one of those to a group that was already pretty talented offensively, it's not like you're not really dealing with world beaters to try and get in the top eight. There's a lot of really flawed, mediocre teams, and they've been just enough better than everyone else.
Anything else you're watching here in the next little while? Anything that's kind of on your radar that you'll be watching for between now and our next chat?
I don't know that anything really jumps to mind. I mean, the OV watch, the Great Chase, definitely following pretty much every second of that. It's been really fun to watch some of the Great Chase goal counters being posted around the city of DC. I don't know if you've seen those. Got the playoff chases. We've got the Frozen Four watch late next week with some other guys that are ready to turn pro and step into NHL lineups, including Zeev Bouyam. We got some NCAA transfers. Chicago's Sasha Boisvert is heading east. There's a lot going on the player movement side. And then as soon as we dig further into April, Pat, like, you had some coaching talk, but like, I think we're going to see 6 to 7 coaching changes, which after so much turnover seems like an incredibly high number.
Yeah, no kidding. Keep our eye on that. All right, Frankie, get out of here, man. Thanks for making it work on this Wednesday. We'll chat again next week. Appreciate the time as always, pal.
Thanks, Pat. See you, bud.
He is Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us every Tuesday, this week on a Wednesday, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. And there is some Flames news on this Wednesday. They have signed. We talked to Frank a little bit about it there. They have signed Idar. See, look at that. I'm going to get it. Idar Suniev to his 3-year entry-level deal. And a few things to kind of pass along and a little bit of intel, a little bit more intel on the signing. First of all, here's the technicalities of it. Because he is his age, it is a 3-year entry-level deal. But because they have decided to start the contract immediately, Suniev's first year of that entry-level deal has already been burnt. So it's essentially a 2-ish year deal for Suniev, and it will kick in for real next year. Because it is kicked in this year, the way the agreement works, Suniev is not eligible to play in the American League until next season. Think what happened with Matt Coronato 2 years ago when Matt signed his deal out of college when his time at Harvard came to an end that season. Same thing. He signed a deal that kicked in immediately, burnt the first year. He's now on the third year, or finishing the third year of that 3-year ELC, but essentially has played only the 2 seasons. He was not eligible to join the Wranglers that year and wasn't eligible to join them into the following season. Same thing is true with Suniev, who has very similar numbers to Coronato coming out of their sophomore years in the NCAA. So those are kind of the technicalities of it. I do fully believe that we will see Suniev in NHL action if the Flames are out of it. If it turns into a situation where they're essentially mathematically eliminated or are fully mathematically eliminated, I firmly believe the Flames will put Suniev into NHL action, which is kind of an exciting consolation prize. Obviously, you want all the games, and the Flames want all the games between now and the end of the regular season to mean something. The Flames still want to make the playoffs, and they're still going to go full-on balls to the wall to make the playoffs. But if it does fall short and they don't make it, then I really do think that we'll see Suniev in NHL action this year, which is the only remaining games he's eligible to play. So that is something to watch for. Also think similar situation for a William Stromgren or even a Zane Parekh if his season comes to an end, although Zane Parekh was an absolute beast on Tuesday night as Saginaw saved their season and avoided going down 3-0 against Erie on the road. Zane Parekh, 2 goals, including the overtime winner late in overtime number 1 and an assist. So he was in on all 3 goals and had the overtime winner. Just an absolute star performance for a superstar junior hockey player in Zane Parekh, which was really cool to see. So they're down 2-1 to Erie in that best of 7. So it's going at least 5 games. But Suniev, Parekh, Stromgren, maybe Kuznetsov, few others. If the Flames do fall out of this thing, I do think we'll see names like that in NHL action. And I do believe that, you know, part of the reason why they were able to get this done is because the Flames did relent a little bit. The Flames really wanted to get Suniev signed. They didn't want to take the risk of him going back for a third year. And once you go back for your third year, well, then you're only a year away from being able to go the Justin Schultz route or the UFA route. And then it's like, oh, only one more year. Might as well finish my degree and become an unrestricted free agent. So getting him to come out after his sophomore year, much like they got Matt Coronato to come out after his sophomore year, that was really important for the Flames. And I think if they had their druthers, they probably would have liked to have the contract kick in next year and ATO him the rest of this year. But to get this done, because of how much they wanted this player to sign and how much they wanted to get their development team's hands on him and get him with the group immediately, yeah, they decided that they'd burn the first year of the entry-level deal. And as Frank said, there's some benefit to having the contract come to an end a little bit earlier than it would otherwise. So I know there's been some questions on social media, but like, why would they burn the first year of his entry-level deal? Well, that's why, because they wanted to make sure they got him. And this was kind of the thing that I think pushed it over the top for Suniev and his camp. And so to ensure that Suniev stays with the team, doesn't go the UFA route in 2 years, and now can start his professional career and maybe be in the mix to be an NHLer full time as early as training camp,
that the Flames were more than willing to, I don't know if it's concession, they were more than willing to go down that road and sign on the dotted line in that regard. I think it's super exciting. He had 38 points in 35 games as a sophomore at UMass, including 20 goals. This guy's turned into a pretty darn good prospect, and when it's all said and done, maybe he's the most exciting player that comes from that Tyler Toffoli trade in June of 2023 when they sent him to the Devils. This was the pick they used from New Jersey in the 2023 draft. Idar Suniev has signed his entry-level deal. Contract kicks in this year. It's pretty exciting. We'll continue along on Flames Talk on this Wednesday. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers will join the show very shortly. And hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Wednesday edition of the program continues. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Let's say hello to Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Hello, Vic.
Hey, buddy.
And let's also say hello to Derek Wills, because it is time for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. Gentlemen, Flames are back on home ice for Thursday, travel day Wednesday, and puck drop 7 o'clock Thursday night against the plucky Anaheim Ducks. And I don't even say that as a pun. They've just been a really tough out for a lot of teams here. We'll get to them in a second, but let's start with this question. We talked a lot about Dan Vladar on Tuesday's show. He's 5-1-1 in his last 7 starts. I thought Dustin Wolfe was outstanding against Utah and allowed the Flames to hang around in that game and give him a chance to maybe scalp another point or two in a game where they didn't really have it for 60 minutes again. So, knowing both those things, knowing what we've seen, knowing the record, so on and so forth, and knowing the opponent, guys, who would you start in net against the Ducks on Thursday night?
Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure there's a right or a wrong answer. It feels like the Flames have two good options between the pipes right now. But thinking about it this afternoon, I would lean Dan Vladar for a few reasons. I think he's been excellent since the start of February, as we talked about yesterday, 5-1-1. After snapping a 6-game losing streak. He also only got one of the 3 games on the road, so he should be a little bit more rested than Dustin Wolfe. And digging a little bit deeper, both guys are actually unbeaten in 3 career games against the Ducks. So Vladar is 3-0-0 with 2.19 goals against average and a .910 save percentage. But Dustin Wolfe actually has better numbers, again, 3-0-0. But with a 1.99 goals against average and a .926 save percentage. So, you know, both guys have been really good against the Ducks. So then digging even a little bit deeper, I took a look at how both guys have fared against the Golden Knights. And, you know, considering how good the Golden Knights have been basically since they came into the league, both guys have been okay against a perennial Stanley Cup contender. But Wolfe has been a little bit better. Vladar 1-2-1 with a 3.08 and .899. And then Wolf actually unbeaten in regulation time against the Golden Knights, 1-0-1, 2.99, .912. So long answer, just a little bit longer. I certainly don't feel super strongly about it either way. But because Wolf played last night and got a lot of work in that game against the Utah Hockey Club, and the team traveled today, and you know, Vladar has been really good since the start of February, and Wolf has a little bit better numbers against the Golden Knights, I would go with Vladar against the Ducks.
Yeah, Willsy, you pretty much laid out exactly what I had sort of jotted down, in the sense that, one, I don't really have strong feelings on this right now. Two, it feels like there's no true wrong answer to this question. And three, I am leaning towards Vladar. And you ran through the numbers of both goalies head-to-head against the Anaheim Ducks. Not a significant difference between the two. The reason I lean a little bit closer to Vladar is I feel like we're very much back to, or should be, or could be back to the win and you're in at this point. Vladar has won 3 straight starts. Wolf is on a 3-game losing streak, one in overtime. That's pretty much the deciding factor for me. I think we're splitting hairs, or at least personally I'm splitting hairs, as to which one I think should start against the Ducks on Thursday. Again, I don't feel as if there's really a wrong answer here, because you can just point to Wolf and go, okay, well, win in your end, that's fine. But he did basically everything he could to keep Calgary in that game against Utah. 2 goals against, 1.11 goals saved above expected. You can't really hang that loss necessarily on him. In fact, I think he kept them in it way longer than they possibly should have been. But again, no real wrong answer, no real hard feeling one way or the other. Fact of Vladar's playing his best hockey this season right now, I lean that way.
I hate to just be kind of a sing the chorus here and be the harmony, but I'd go the same way. I really do, because I think I want to go Wolf against Vegas. That's your, you know, for a number of different reasons. I mean, first of all, Wolf is still your number one, and Vegas is the heavy on this quick 2-game homestand. Not to say Anaheim will be easy, because they've been a tough out for seemingly everybody here. But, you know, Vegas is still the playoff team that you've got on this 2-game homestand. Vladar hasn't started a home game in a month. So I do think at some point, you probably, like, it doesn't always have to be Vladar on the road. And I think the fatigue thing that you talk about, he had a lot of work. Wolf, that is, a ton of work on Tuesday, as you said, Wilsey, and then a travel day Wednesday. I mean, it feels like a really good spot to put Vladar in. And on top of that, you've got a guy who's winning his games too, and I think has earned a little bit more playing time and earned a little bit more of a, hey, you know what? We don't need to force feed the other guy. We can put Wolf in games where we think that it's the best case to go. And we also have confidence that Vladar can get the job done. So I really think that this is a good spot to, like, I don't think that you flip-flop the rest of the way, nor do I think you just go straight win and you're in. But I do think there's a really good argument with a lot of hockey to be played every second day for the final 8 games of the regular season as this team tries to continue their uphill climb towards the playoffs. I think you can make a very salient argument that Vladar gives you the best chance to win on Thursday, and then you go to Wolf on Saturday against the Vegas Golden Knights. So, you know, and the fact that we're having this conversation, and the fact that here we are, all three of us saying that we lean towards Vladar on Thursday night, that really is an underlining of just how Dan has turned the narrative on his season.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I would say that I think that Vladar gives them a better chance to win against the Ducks on Thursday night. For me, it's pretty even. Wolf is the number one guy, but Vladar is more rested, and both guys have good numbers, really good numbers against the Ducks. So I had to, as I mentioned earlier, dig a little bit deeper to try to answer this question and take a look at how the two guys have fared against the Flames' next opponent, the Golden Knights. Maybe a more interesting question, guys. You talked about the win and the in. So regardless, if it's Dan Vladar or Dustin Wolf against the Ducks on Thursday, what happens if that guy plays really well? Do you go back to him on Saturday, or are you giving each guy one start during this 2-game homestand?
I'd be going Wolf on Saturday regardless.
Regardless? Yeah. See, okay. I would have to see the body of work for whoever starts on that Thursday. So if we're all
outside of that seven-letter word. Outside of the seven-letter word.
I was like, in my head, I had, what if he stops 27 of 28? Do you go back to Vladar? I really would need to know the outcome. If it's 27-28, I might be inclined to still lean Vladar and ride his hot streak as far as you can, with the full understanding that, hey, let's not, like, kid ourselves. Dustin Wolf is still your number one goalie. You're just trying to maximize as many points as possible and stretch out this hot streak from Vladar.
Yep. By the way, 7:30 faceoff on Thursday, not 7 o'clock.
Is it? Yeah, 7? Why?
It's a 7:30.
Do we know why?
Just to make us all angry, Wilsey.
There was a bit of an eye roll over here, won't lie.
probably television of some sort. That's usually sure. Why, some sort of exclusive window for the first 2.5 hours, but I don't actually know the reason why. It's Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. And it is the Anaheim Ducks, of whom the Flames play twice in their final 8 games of the regular season. Guys, Anaheim's not going to make the playoffs this year. I think we can all agree, though. The Ducks have taken a step towards where they'd like to go. They're not fully there, and they still have more steps to take to get back to being the respectable team they want to be. They're 14 points back of a playoff spot and have not been officially eliminated, but that's coming very soon.
What do we make of the Ducks, though, big picture as they go into next season? Do we think the Ducks, as a division rival, are, you know, kind of clearly on the right track now?
Yeah, I think they're trending in the right direction. They've got some good young players, and Mason McTavish. I actually love Jackson Lacombe, who leads the team in points by defenseman. He's got 43, so he's had a fantastic season. Leo Carlson, Cutter Gauthier. I do think that they've put a pretty good core together. And when you look at their cap space, they've got a ton of it. If I'm not mistaken, I looked this up last week, the Flames have the second most cap space and the Ducks have the third most cap space. Now, that could change between now and the offseason, or I should say now and the start of next season. But if I'm the Ducks, I think they're far enough along in the rebuild where they can start to add some veterans to complement these younger players that they've drafted and developed. So I do think that the Ducks are definitely trending in the right direction. They are young, they are skilled, and you know, defensively, I think they have some work to do, and we'll see what their goaltending situation looks like. I just keep waiting for Jod Gibson to get dealt, and you know, he just keeps sticking around there. But we'll see what that looks like going into next season. But I think they're at a point, guys, where it's maybe time to add a veteran or two just to complement that group of young guys they've got.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think they have the potential to be one of those teams next season at this time are going to be in and around that conversation. I think they can be a 90-point team as soon as next year, and that playoff window is going to be opening soon. And, Wilsey, you laid out the young top-end forwards that they have in McTavish, Carlson, Gauthier. They also have the number three pick from the 2024 draft and Bennett Senecky on the way as well. And on top of that, you talk about their D. They've got a core four right now that are 24 or younger, led by Jackson Lacombe, that I think is just going to continue to grow together as well. Then they've got good support veterans that are kind of in between age, whether it's Troy Terry. I'm not the biggest fan of Trevor Zegras, but I know that there's a lot of support for the skill that he has league-wide. And to me, the biggest thing that sort of lends me to think that they're ready to push for a playoff spot, you mentioned their goalie situation. Lukas Dostal is one of the elite young goalies in the league. He's still only 24 years old. To me, he's a bona fide number one. His international resume is as sharp as they come at all levels to this point. I think they have absolutely all the pieces. And to your point, yeah, they are in that window to start adding a key veteran or two at the forward and defense position to really put them over the hump. I really do think that this team is poised to excel for the next decade, and I think that next step comes next year.
Yeah, and the biggest reason that I would be like, yeah, this team looks like they're on the right track is because, first and foremost, hey, they've given the ball to Lukas Dostal, and he's the guy, and he's having an outstanding season between the pipes for the Anaheim Ducks, and is a really big reason why they've been able to have the season they've had. And so you look at Dostal and you say to yourself, okay, well, they've got their goalie of the future. And at some point, I think that you're right, Wilsey, they will at some point, you think, trade away John Gibson and maybe get an asset there. They have gone out and already started kind of around the edges, adding some of those veterans. You look at Alex Killorn, you look at Radko Gudas. They've done that already. Jacob Trouba in a trade this year, and Trouba's been, you know, they've been raving about what Trouba's brought to that mix in Anaheim since he's gotten there. So I definitely think that we're talking about a team that is moving in the right direction. And I do think that they're going to, you know, the next step for them would be kind of be what like the Montreal Canadiens are this year or the Ottawa Senators are this year, in that, you know, they've been this building team for X amount of years, and now it's time to see whether or not they can, you know, crest into that team that's fighting for a playoff spot right to the very end. You know, Ottawa is almost certainly going to make the playoffs, and Montreal's got a decent chance of making the playoffs. They're in the driver's seat right now for that final wild card spot. If Anaheim can be where Columbus or Montreal or Ottawa is next year, I think that is a real nice step forward for them. And we'll see if they can. I mean, Lukas Dostal is right up near the top of the league when it comes to things like goals saved above expected. So is Gibson, who's having a really good year. And, you know, if you were to say right now, like, who are the really good young goalies? Who are the top young goalies in the NHL? I think we're watching one in this market in Dustin Wolf at the age of 23. And Lucas Dostal, his numbers are right there in the same mix as Wolf at the age of 24. And that's a nice feather to have in the cap if you're the Ducks. So we'll see if they can take those steps. But they are. I would not be writing them off on Thursday night. They've been a really tough out for everybody they've been playing here down the stretch.
I wouldn't take that game lightly either. I mean, the Flames shouldn't be taking anybody lightly at this point in time. Maybe the Sharks to some extent, but even them, they've got some good players. And
Sharks gave them all they could handle last time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So you really can't take anybody too lightly at this time of the year when every single point matters. One guy who I do wonder about with the Ducks, and I wonder about his future with the team, is Trevor Zegras. I mean, a few years ago, he looked like he was going to be a superstar. And now I'm still trying to figure out what he is. I'm not sure that there's a long-term future for Trevor Zegras with the Ducks. I feel like he's a guy who maybe needs a change of scenery, not because the organization hasn't handled him the right way, but I feel like he maybe needs a new voice so he can become a better 200-foot player.
It's just puzzling because I put him, as opposed to putting him with the McTavish, Carlson's, Gauthier's, I put him in that sort of support tier with Troy Terry. Still only 24 years old. Feels like he's been in the league for almost a decade. But you're right. It's like you've been around for this long. There's no doubting your skill. There's no doubting the individual talent. But what are you at 24? Because at 20, 21, you look like you were going to be a budding superstar. And as it stands, I think he's got 10 goals in 49 games this season. 28 points, 49 games.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't scream high offensive talent. Like the results, the output isn't matching the input, so to speak. I do wonder if it's a change of scenery thing that reignites him again.
Yeah. I know that a lot of people have really liked the way that he's kind of tried to change his game and improve his two-way play, improve his engagement level, physicality, those types of things. But at the same time, the offense has fallen off, and I wonder a little bit or a lot about what a change of scenery would do for Zegras as well. That is a 7:30 faceoff. Wills, Vix, don't forget, 7:30 on Thursday, just a little bit later on Thursday night.
I'm going to be at the Dome all day anyway. It just means a little bit longer day for me. So I won't be late. I can tell you that.
we'll see. We'll see you at the Dome on Thursday morning. Thank you, Wilsey.
All right, guys. Go Rangers.
Right. The Rangers and Wild play on Wednesday night. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames roundtable. And we start to wrap things up this hour. Shan Vergy and Cam Hughes have been our producers this hour. And the Daily Flames roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.